Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide, and today my guest on this podcast is Jack Turnbull. Jack is founder of The Actors Site, an acting school in North Hollywood, and a veteran acting coach. The Actors Site offers daily and weekly classes aimed at students from 5 to 25. They also offer a summer camp, workshops, online classes, and industry showcases. Jack, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here.
All right.
So I want to open by talking about your approach to acting. There's so many different ways to teach acting, and I'm always curious about the differences between teachers and techniques. How do you approach it?
Good question. First, my mantra has been, acting is a muscle. You have to work it out. And as a man, I always think of sports analogies. And the other thing is practice makes possible. So if you practice something enough, you become good at it. And so we have seven different techniques that we teach, seven different fundamental techniques. And on top of that, we always do a cold read audition in every class because Hollywood is an audition town. So you have to practice auditioning. And if you don't love to audition, then Hollywood's not the place for you. If you like theater and you want to do the same role for 6 weeks, eight performances a week, then Hollywood's not really the place to be, except that they do cast a lot of that here.
Mm-hmm, they do.
But I would recommend you go to New York for that type of thing. But if you're interested in film and television, where you may go on anywhere from 1 to 20 auditions in a week, and you have to be able to take the material, make it come alive, and be believable, then our school is for you, and Hollywood is for you. You love to meet new people. Hollywood's a great place, because that's what actors do here. They're constantly meeting new people. And I always look at it, I was talking to a casting director this morning, who talked about how when you go for an audition, you're not just auditioning for the role, you're auditioning to be part of the repertory company of that casting office because they go, oh, well, they might not be right for this role, but they might be right for the next one. So when we coach for auditions and when we teach fundamentals, we teach that you have to enjoy the process and that when you go into audition, you're actually auditioning and bringing a piece of you, trying to leave a piece of you with the people. With the casting office, if it's a producer session with the producers, and so they go, oh, well, we can take this piece and we can put it in our next project.
I love that. I've never heard of that analogy, and it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
It's so true because you do end up in the same casting offices over and over again, and if that casting director likes you, they sort of tuck you it away in their mental vault, you know, and look for the right place to put you, I think.
Well, it's like a community theater, but you become part of their repertory company. Now, you may not have a role yet, but you're part of their company, and they go, oh, well, we're just moving them in, and we'll think of them as an understudy. If you think in sports terms, they're sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
And you might get into the game, but just to get to the bench is a huge thing.
It is. So you have to be good at that audition. So you work a lot on audition technique?
A lot on audition technique. Every class that we have involves audition technique, and then the seven fundamentals are what give you the fundamental basis from which to approach your acting skills. For instance, every singer, they do breathing skills. Well, every actor needs to do breathing skills. Every athlete does breathing skills. And right now the finals are on for the NBA. And you notice every one of the guys, when they have to shoot a free throw, they're aware of their breathing. You see them go before they shoot the shot.
Yeah.
Because they're constantly reminded of their breathing. And part of the reason that you do practice and the reason you have to practice so much is to control your breathing. And I like repetition of the dialogue that you're going to speak. Mm-hmm. And if you practice repeating it different ways, then you get control of the breathing. So you have so much more power over what you're going to say. Even if you want to show weakness, you at least have that power to show weakness. In other words, you can show whatever you want, because you're not held back by the fact that your breath is not available.
That's cool. So you are talking about, you're alluding to something that I think about a lot, which is when people are practicing for auditions, one of the issues I know is a very common issue for actors is they practice it the same way too much, and so they end up in this deep sort of rutted groove, and then when the casting director asks them to do something different, they kind of can't. They almost exactly. Don't know how, you know? It's like they've got the cadence, they've got the rhythm, they've got the intonation, and they can't even veer from that. So what do you do to help actors not do that?
One of the things I have a technique. Now, I work with different coaches in my school, so they each have their own techniques. But my technique that I love to use when I'm coaching someone and they seem too locked in is we do a technique I call last line first. Mm-hmm. And you take your audition scene, you take the last line that you're going to do, and you have the actor do the line, and you feed them the line before, then they do the line, and then you say, okay, let's change it. Then you feed them the line before, and they do the line. Say, okay, let's change it again. Feed them the line, they do it again. And then if they can't change it, then we do what I call the Seinfeld exercise. And it was taught to me by Judy, who was the coach of the Seinfeld show, where they, Judy Kerr, by the way, her name, she has a fabulous book called Acting is Everything.
Oh, good. Acting is Everything. I'm writing that down.
Yeah. And she was the coach on Seinfeld. But one of the things they would do with Seinfeld is they would take a line, a simple line, and they would change the rhythms of the line over and over and over again till they found the rhythm that they felt was something that people would not be expecting.
I love that.
So the whole show was about people say, hi, how are you? And Kramer would come in and go, hi, how are you? and they'd go, well, where did that come from? Yeah. They'd go, oh, it's Kramer. That's just the way he is.
Yeah.
But they would sit and they'd practice. They'd say, how can Kramer come in and do something that's completely different? And then say the same line that, say, Jerry or somebody else on the show would do. They would change the rhythm completely them. So, how are you? So, in other words, they would change their emphasis. And so, if you do that and you change the emphasis on every line, and this is common for all experienced actors do this.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes kids and teens are not taught this because they're taught, okay, this is the right way. This is the rhythm that they want. And so many coaches are given line readings because the actors themselves aren't prepared. But I like them to do this exercise themselves, where they take each line they have to speak in the scripted material and they try it different ways. Now, I say last line first because when people study a script and they study their scene, their audition material, they develop a mental linear path that they want to take. And the path itself, you want to be spontaneous. And they forget that there's a mountain there. Now you say, what do you mean there's a mountain there? Well, if you've ever been a skier, and you look at the path that they take down the mountain, if you ever looked at the slalom, you can look at the gates and say, oh, there's the gates. I know how to approach the gates, but there's a mountain there, and as you come down the mountain, everything changes as you come down the mountain. Well, it's the same in an audition, so you have to be prepared for those changes, and so part of the way to prepare for that is to be able to approach each line, each bit, completely different. And also, when you come down the mountain, if you've ever skied, you know, if you, whether you do the slalom or not, each time you hit those gates is completely different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you have to practice hitting your gates precisely and differently every time. And a lot of actors don't get that, particularly young actors with poor coaching, where they haven't done improv, they haven't done basic fundamental repetition exercises, which are so you know, repetition is the key. That's why I say practice makes possible. They've done studies where they say anyone can be a genius with 10,000 hours of practice at a very specific skill. And that's the same with acting, although if you're very young, 10,000 hours is a lot.
It is a lot.
Yeah.
So you teach acting classes both in your studio in North Hollywood and also online. What do you do in your classes?
Well, the classes in the classroom, we do the seven fundamentals. We might not do all seven. We do at least three or four of them so that they've practiced imagination drills. They've practiced repetition drills. They've practiced voice and diction drills, which are very, very important.
That's huge. I can't tell you how many times I see kids come onto the set of Liv and Maddie, and it's like, guys, you know, we don't understand what you're saying.
Well, as I always say, Betty Botter bought some butter, but she said, this butter's bitter. If I put it in my batter, it will make my batter bitter, but a bit of better butter, better than the bitter butter, will but make my batter better. So Betty Botter bought some butter, better than the bitter butter, and she made her batter better.
Nice.
So it's better Betty Butter, but a bit of better butter. But anyway, there's
It helps.
Yeah, it's fantastic to where they need to open their mouths and speak clearly.
Yeah.
We don't use tongue twisters. We use tongue detanglers.
Oh, nice.
So you have to think of it in the opposite way, because twisters means, oh, I'm going to twist up my tongue. But detanglers means I'm going to untangle my tongue. And the whole point is good actors. I always use, I hate to use celebrity names, but I always use the Johnny Depp analogy in that no matter what kind of character he plays, you always understand every single word.
It's true.
Because that's part of why he's a star. And you look at almost every star, you notice no matter how crazy their characters, you understand them perfectly. Now, many of the English stars, I've noticed, only do that when they're using an American accent.
That's funny, really?
But when you watch one of their movies that's for the English audience, you can't understand a word they say.
Well, but that could be that we don't understand British accents.
No,
that's not it.
No, they're just going, okay, I'm supposed to be playing a limey. I'm going to
get sloppy with my diction now.
Yeah, they're very sloppy with diction.
So you also offer summer camps. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Well, the summer camps, each one is a little different. We also cover singing. We also have a comedy showcase in a camp, but the camps themselves cover all basic audition skills, and then also most of the kids that are in camp are with agents and managers, and they're going on auditions in the afternoons, sometimes in the mornings. We've had several kids book pilots during camp in the summer.
Oh, that's fun. Wow.
And it's interesting, there aren't a ton of pilots in the summer, but there are some. And particularly a lot of the cable companies right now are casting their pilots and then replacement shows for TV replacement shows later in the season are casting their pilots. And summertime is just a very, very busy time. Back in the 1900s, things were different. We had our slow time, and you could actually leave town from about the 10th of May to the end of July, and absolutely nothing would be happening. And right now, all of our kids and teens are going on just tons of auditions, and it's very, very busy, and it's supposed to be the slow time. And we have three of our coaches who are, in between June and July, are shooting a total of six different movies.
Oh.
One with Charlize Theron. One of our coaches just finished a movie with J.K. Simmons. And these are major supporting roles.
Yeah, yeah.
They're
That's
not starring
exciting.
Roles, but they're supporting roles. And these are our coaches. So our coaches are also very busy. In fact, for the camps, your coach may be coming in from the set.
directly.
You know, because right now I'm scheduling the camps for next week, which I'll be out of town. We have one coach who looks like she'll be able to cover for the whole week. And then I have two different coaches that are coming off of movie sets to fill in on other days. And so, and they're doing big movies. They're shooting a lot of movies right now, but they're going all over the country. They shoot all over the country. I don't know if anybody's in Canada, but right now there's an awful lot of shooting in Louisiana, Atlanta, New Mexico, Texas. So they're flying all over. Somebody's shooting in, I believe, Pittsburgh. Is it Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah,
where's the Charlize Theron movie shooting?
I don't know.
It's either Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or someplace because
somewhere in there.
He's going up there for like 5 weeks. So that's a good fun time.
That's a good
on
gig.
The movie set. Yeah.
So I'm really glad you brought that up because I think a lot of people feel like if they can't come here for pilot season, that there's just no point in coming and like, oh, I missed pilot season this year. Now I have to wait a whole year to come to Los Angeles. It's just not true. You know, there is stuff being cast year round. Yes, more of it is cast in that several months than other times of the year, but there's kind of always something going on, except at holiday.
My personal feeling is that there's actually less during pilot season.
Really?
And let me tell you why. Almost all of the agents, all the representatives, all of the casting people, they say come during pilot season. And up until a few years ago, that was the case. There were several reasons for it. One was during pilot season, in order to shoot a summer commercial, they would have to shoot it 3 or 4 months ahead. Now, because everything is digital, it's not on film. Like, if you have a special effect, you just do it on the computer.
Yep.
And so they need 2 weeks, maybe a week.
So lead times are much shorter.
Much shorter. Also, even in its heyday, well, there was never more than 8 to 12 kid and teen roles cast during for primetime pilots. Now, pilot season is based on the primetime shows, which involve CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, and to a lesser degree, CW, and they used to have another name for one. But they didn't really have a lot of kids since Seventh Heaven went off the air. They didn't have a lot of kids in their pilots. And Fox, once in a while, will have some. The others will have, I mean, a big pilot season is 10 roles for kids and teens. Where if you go into, like, the Disney and Nickelodeon schedule, which is from summertime till December for a lot of their pilots. Now, they also cast during pilot season.
Yeah, they seem to cast almost year-round.
Well, they have two big presentations they do. I don't know if you know this, but there's a February presentation and there's one in July. So they are planning their shows around those two times, and they go in and show to advertisers. And these are the cable, you might call them upfronts, but it's not the same as the primetime upfronts, which are in the middle of May. But upfronts mean they show what they might be showing later, and they're trying to sell advertising. And so there's the cable is two times a year, so I think they're in two different cities. I don't know a lot about it other than that I know they try to get their pilots together before some convention in, I believe, February and another one in July. I used to track that a lot more when I was a manager, but I don't track that so much anymore because the point is that casting for pilots is pretty much year-round, and particularly for cable pilots because they have two different deadlines. And if they're casting for July, that means that they're doing the kids. Now, they always cast the kids last. I hope you know that, particularly for non-kid shows.
For non-kid shows, yeah. For kid shows, they cast the kids first.
Because they have to have the adults cast, and then they cast the kids according to who they think might morph into someone's child or who might possibly look like someone's child. Mm-hmm. And so it's tricky in that it's the last few weeks. In fact, sometimes they'll be having sessions a week before the the shows actually shoot the pilot. And sometimes they recast right after the pilot.
They do. That's something nobody likes to talk about.
That's
a painful
recasting.
One. Yeah.
Just because you booked the pilot doesn't mean you'll be picked up to go to series. And for some of the cable companies, including Disney, sometimes they'll shoot 3 or 4 pilots of the same show and recast it and retool it and retry it 6 months or a year later. And a lot of that has to do with they have a deal with the producers. They have to honor that deal, but they're not quite happy with the product. And so they make them retool it. And the producers might not be completely happy with the product. But they're long-term deals. I mean, for kids and parents who are here for only 2 months, it's like, oh, we got to get in, get it done, and everything else. But for that producer, they're like, this is my baby.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 months is normal for a baby. It's just these might be the 3-year gestation period for a baby.
Exactly.
Because they want a certain product before they put it on the air. And that's the same for the network. And several of the shows that are on the air now went through several different formats before they finally wound up on the air.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty common.
Yeah, that's very common.
So, I was looking at your website, and I see that in addition to all the classes and camps that you offer, you also offer sessions with industry professionals, like agents and casting directors. How does that work?
Generally, they come in to mentor the parents.
Ah, good idea. Something I'm always in favor of.
And so they answer a lot of questions, and I found every agent, every manager, every casting director has a slightly different take.
Sure. There's no one way to do anything.
On what they want to tell the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way ours are set up, and then after they mentor the parents, and the kids in many cases too, the kids can ask questions and they can learn a lot about what happens in the room. Then we actually, we have different formats, but one of the formats is where they go in and actually do like a mock session with them, and then they're evaluated on how they approach the session. And a lot of it is, do they establish strong characters, you know, did they choose appropriate material, or sometimes the material is assigned to them, and so did they stretch into it properly? There's 5 or 6 different criteria, and they're evaluated on that, and then they can take that evaluation, take it to their acting coach or the teacher, and say, okay, this is what you need to work on. In general, the kids who attend ours are very, very, very good, and so for them, we've found many of them find future success, whether in that casting office or another casting office. But it gives them a ton of confidence because going into the room, doing a session with the casting director, and every one of them is different. Every one of them reads different, or we may have a reader there. Everybody runs their sessions different. Every one of them does a chit-chat differently. Oh, the one most disarming thing in Hollywood for kids from out of the area is how nice casting people are. They are sweet.
Yeah.
They're so nice to everybody. Now, if you go in other areas, the casting directors are sometimes a little uppity and nasty. And maybe for commercials, they're that way sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know about commercials. I just know about theatrical casting directors.
Well, for commercials, they're stressed. Sometimes they got to see 300 people in a day, so they're just snappy. But for theatrically, here the casting directors are so nice. And even if you don't do well, they still will treat you very much with respect. And you can't you can't misinterpret that to think that they love you. Because they are nice to everybody.
Which is a lovely thing.
It's a lovely thing, but you can't go, oh, yeah, I rocked the room. They loved me.
Yeah.
They said, oh, yeah, so nice to see you. They said, oh, thank you so much. And that's very common here, and it's almost disarming because people come in, and a lot of the kids, they go, oh, they let it go to their head thinking they're better than they are. and they stop going to class. You know, if they've got an agent or manager that sends them out a lot, they're getting a ton of auditions, and they're just not booking because they don't have the fundamental skills. They don't practice, because remember, practice makes it possible.
Yeah, no, it's easy to get lazy when you think you're just kind of killing the game, but if the evidence isn't there in terms of actually getting booked, you may not really be killing the game.
And sometimes if you're a specific type, you may be booking too. Mm-hmm. And after that booking is over, you may have nowhere to go because you don't have any fundamental skills.
Yeah.
And the fundamental skills are just like any sport. You know, right now basketball finals are on, so you got to be able to dribble the ball, you got to be able to shoot the ball, you have to be able to pass the ball, you have to be able to catch the ball, you have to be able to go left and then right and then right and then left. And those are things, those are all practice skills, and they're all so simple. I mean, I can tell anybody how to do it right now. You know, you go left, then you go right, and you dribble the ball left, and then you dribble right. But to do it in a game is a completely different thing.
Yeah.
And you have to practice it constantly, constantly. And one thing I know, when the MVP, Seth Curry, was injured, and they were just showing him practicing, and it's like he would practice just his footwork right by the out-of-bounds line.
Mm-hmm.
Just practice his footwork there. And that's what an actor has to do. You have to practice every one of your fundamentals, particularly speech and diction, and particularly your emotional connection to the characters that you're asked to play. And if you can't make it real, if we don't believe you, then sometimes your career just dies because you can't find that connection between yourself and the reality of the character.
Yeah, and that's what we're looking for as an audience, is something that draws us in so much that we really believe it's happening.
Suspend disbelief.
Precisely. Yeah. So I love the sports analogy, and I agree completely, you know, that the more you practice these things, and I think a lot of actors could take notes from athletes in this department. You know, I think actors can forget how important that is.
I've had a chance in my life to coach athletes,
mm-hmm.
And the main thing they wanted to learn was speech and diction, because I worked with a speech and diction person. We developed a system back in the 90s. And the interesting thing is, no matter how big they are, no matter who they are, they do the work. They never give you an attitude. They might give you an attitude about every other part of their life, but not about the work. They just do the work.
That's beautiful. That's inspiring. Similarly, you know, you talk a lot on your site about the actor as CEO, and I really like this. It underlines the importance of running your career like a business, because guess what? It is actually a business. Can you share a little bit about this, and especially how it relates to the career of a young actor?
Well, if you're talking about with kids and teens, mm-hmm. then it's the parent is the CEO.
It's kind of true, isn't it? Although, you know, the older the kid is, the more sort of collaborative that could and probably should be.
Well, the child from even 8 or 9 years old should definitely be sharing in all the basic fundamentals. They should have their packet with their headshot, their resume, their work permit. I'm trying to think of everything.
Their Coogan information.
Coogan information, copies of all of that, a pencil, a highlighter, a highlighter, a highlighter.
A highlighter?
A highlighter. And copies of their scenes, and copies of every scene that hasn't already been cast yet. They should have a folder of all of that. And sometimes all of your scenes. But definitely, if it hasn't been cast yet, it should still be in your folder, because you could get called back even if you didn't get a call back. And you should work it to death. I have a story of one young actress who went in for a series regular role. They completely discounted her, said she was the wrong age, everything was wrong. She kept the script, kept working on it, working on it, working on it, working on it. 3 weeks later, something had changed with the role. They called her back in, and she booked it.
Ooh.
And the main thing was, she kept the script. she brought it to me to work with her as a coach. She brought it to a couple of our other coaches. She loved the scene. Mm. She shared it with other actors so they could do the scene, because it was a great scene and they weren't called in on it. And so she got to see what they did with the same scene. And it gave her all these choices. So when she was called back in, she nailed it.
That's so cool. So in other words, you're talking in large part about simply taking responsibility for the direction of your career and not passively waiting to get called in for an audition and then maybe complaining if you don't.
You know? Oh, yeah. Now back to the CEO thing.
Right.
Now back to that. I know. Yeah. Anyway, sometimes I get distracted. Yeah, get me back on the CEO.
I got you there.
Well, the parent is the boss. Mm-hmm. And if they want to hire a manager, they hire the manager. If they want to hire a salesperson, they hire the agent and they administer them. And if they're, I always say, if you're not happy with your agent, you tell them. You're saying, hey, you're not doing your job. And sometimes people have to change. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with the manager. If they're not happy with the manager, if the manager's not doing any managing. But as CEO, your career is your little store, right? And you're the owner. You're paying the rent. Mm-hmm. Which is a huge expense. You're paying the product development, which are your classes and things, which is a smaller expense. The rent's the biggest thing in Hollywood.
Right.
But you're paying the product development costs, and then you have to look at, well, wait a minute, I've got a manager that's not managing whatever it is they're supposed to manage. And I've got a salesperson that's not bringing in customers. Well, because here the salesperson is supposed to bring in the customers. Mm-hmm. The clients are supposed to help you get auditions. Now, there's many factors involved, but the main thing is communicate with them. And you may find that you don't have a good fit. If you don't have a good fit, sometimes you may have to send a nice thank you letter, because if there's no money involved, you send a nice thank you letter and say, thank you so much, but I'm moving on.
Yeah.
And you send a beautiful thank you letter before you start looking for new representation, because most of the better people in the industry will not poach someone if you're already with somebody else.
Yeah.
So the main thing is if you want to move on, change agents, change managers, then you need to communicate with them that you're unhappy, number one. And number two, you have to free them, fly little birdie fly, before you move on to new representation. Then also, something that they don't talk about too much, and you might not know, particularly if you're from out of town, but you can have 7 or 8 different agents for, I believe, what do we got? We got voiceover.
We got voiceover. We got commercial. We got theatrical.
Print.
Print. Yeah, but commercial and print, aren't they usually the same agent?
Depends.
Oh, okay.
They have dance.
Conceivably a different agent.
Yeah. And there's 3 or 4 agents that you better be a real dancer to get a dance agent.
You better be
a fantastic dancer. Because these are the people, they're casting the dancers for all of the big shows, kids generally, they don't cast dancers for touring shows, but they do cast dancers for the Grammys and things like that when they need kids, and they're gone through the kids' agents that do dance. There's also legit theater agents that only cover legit. There's also promotional agents in 2 ways. If you're famous in other ways besides your acting, you can have an agent for that. Mm-hmm. For instance, if you're a singer, I'm not talking about a singing agent. I'm talking about a promotional agent.
You could have a booking agent.
Yeah, booking agent. Yeah. Famous, if you're famous in other ways. Mm-hmm. And also just about any agent, if you let it be known that you're available, and for instance, we had one client who was on one of the big, I'm trying to say it without saying it, one of the big science fiction shows.
Okay, good.
Where they have big conventions.
Sure.
and who would go and book and sign autographs and get several thousand dollars as a show-up fee, appearance fee.
Right, right.
And different agents from around the country would bring those to their booking agent, their booking agent. So, yeah, there's a lot of different ways. But in general, if you're new to town, you want either one agency to cover both film, TV, and commercials, or a film, TV agent and a commercial agent, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sometimes people have two agents to cover those two things. Those are the two that you come to Hollywood for.
The two main ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And then everything else is kind of gravy, although we have a ton of our kids who do fantastic with print.
Interesting, huh? You know, a lot of that stuff is shot.
And particularly when you're the perfect, I believe it's size 9, 10, or 5, 6.
Is it?
Yeah. you got to fit the clothes, and you got to have the right look, which is very much multi-ethnic right
mm-hmm,
now.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be, you have to be definable as undefinable.
Right, which is a great look for a lot of people right now.
Yeah, that's a great thing.
It's an exciting time. Well, now, you have extensive experience coaching young actors who are on Disney Channel and Nickelodeon. Are there any differences in how you would approach an audition for those networks as opposed to, say, for Fox or for one of the networks?
Oh, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's something that we did that's called bad acting.
Hey, now, careful.
But it's something that both of those channels, their set coaches encourage them to do it.
Okay.
Not that they naturally do it, but their set coaches encourage them to do it, and it's called indicating.
Ah.
And it's when you're sad, you look sad.
I wish you all could see what his face is doing. His face is making a very, very sad, sad face. It's a little cartoony.
Yeah. And if you are happy, you look happy.
And we have a similarly happy, happy, happy face going on here.
Where in normal film, TV, and particularly film, you have to feel it inside. It has to be organic, and you have to feel it. Where for Disney and Nick, both of those, it's great if you not only feel it, but you show it,
mm-hmm.
because that's what indicating is. And so they encourage that. Now, not all Disney and Nick actors do that. At the same time, they encourage it for many of their particularly the guest stars more than the stars themselves.
More than the series regulars, I've noticed that.
Yeah, because the series regulars, basically, you're there to see their specific personality, so they don't do it so much as... But all of the guest roles, when you're coaching somebody and they're just for one slot or even a recurring guest role, they are kind of cartoony.
Mm-hmm.
For the series regular roles... My philosophy when I coach is, now this is a generality, for Disney, they want normal kids, they put them in a situation where they're acting crazy, and for Nick, they want kids who are a little crazy, and they put them in a situation where they're trying to act normal.
Oh, that's an interesting distinction. That's cool. Yeah, I can see
But I'm
that.
Just saying in general...
Mm-hmm. It's a generalization, but it's a decent one.
Because in Nick, they like people that are slightly, normally a little off, mm-hmm. and then they're trying to act normal and fit in. And then in Disney, in general, they have kids that are pretty normal, but they want them to do outrageous things.
Or the circumstances are outrageous or something.
Yeah, well, yeah. The circumstances. And then with Disney particularly, with Nick in general, they just have crazy stuff going on. But in Disney particularly, there's an awful lot. Now, this is not every show, because I haven't watched every show. But the ones that I've studied from years ago... we're very, like I Love Lucy, where mm-hmm. there's a lot of deception.
Mm-hmm.
Where, oh, here's something, and we'll do this, and nobody will know. And then as they get caught, the comedy ensues. So I've just noticed that a lot in the Disney scripts. They're very much I Love Lucy-esque.
I think over the last very short time, by which I mean just the last couple of years, that mm-hmm. they have been... trying in many ways to get a little more realistic in terms of the circumstances and like the subject matter that comes up and the acting. But I think in general it does still hold because this is, as we must remember, children's programming.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So children are bringing a certain set of expectations and understanding to what they're watching. And then they tend to think it's funnier when it's broader, you know?
Yeah. But broad comedy is very... Can be very organic too.
Mm-hmm.
And I know most of the casting directors who cast Disney, they want organic actors who can bring it up and make it broad.
They do. They're not looking for slapstick, so that's something that's probably fair saying.
But don't insult slapstick. I love slapstick.
Sorry, you know. Sorry. No, no offense, Matt. That has its place too. So let's talk a little bit about auditioning. Auditioning, it's truly its own skill set. And it's a critical one if an actor is going to actually succeed in the business. A lot of people, you know, they may be good actors, but auditioning is sort of an Achilles heel for them, maybe because of nerves or whatever. What advice do you have for young actors approaching an audition? What would you coach them to bear in mind?
Well, the first thing is the audition is the job. Because... back in the 1900s, back in the old days, you'd do the audition and then they would work with you and then you'd show up on set. And because they'd worked with you after you booked it, you would provide what they really wanted. But the modern way is the audition is what you give them. Maybe for series regular roles, they might give you a little more coaching. But in general, the audition is the only time the director will talk to you. It's the only time the producers will talk to you. And all they'll talk to you about is to give you your new lines and your new things. So the audition is where you must establish your character, establish what you're going to do with the character, establish your approach, and know your moment before, because every page has a page before it, although your lines may not be on that page before it, and your scene might not be on the page before it, and every scene has an ending, so you have to know how to hit the button, or at least stick the landing, because they're going to hold for 5 or 6 or 7 seconds while we see you thinking at the end. But all of that is covered in the audition. So if you think you're going into the audition to just get to the next step, there is no next step. In fact, so many film auditions now, they tape your audition. The director may or may not be in the room, but they're reviewing your tape, and they're booking you from that. And a lot of times they just want to see you in the room to see if you're the size and shape that they want. But the tape is what they're really booking from. And so your audition, and so if you can't communicate on tape, how are you going to communicate on film?
I've had that thought a lot.
if you can't communicate in a simple video camera, then how are you going to communicate on a, you know, $600,000 Red camera?
It's so interesting. Some people seem to genuinely come alive through the lens of a camera, and other people, they may be seemingly completely alive in front of you, but then through the lens of the camera, they kind of flatten out and disappear. It's really interesting. I don't know if you've noticed this or not.
It's called, there's two different things. There's photogenic, which is one thing, and there's cinematic, which is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the cinematic people are people who might not even be photogenic.
Right.
But on film, you care about them.
You can't take your eyes off of them, and it has nothing to do necessarily with beauty,
as
you
say. Them.
Yeah.
And that's 90 off TV. You have to have to invite people into your living room. You have to care about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just notice in casting, sometimes they get big stars. They give them a TV show, pay them lots of money, and the show goes in the toilet because they're not somebody you want in your living room every week.
It's so true. I was talking to a casting director, I can't even remember who right now, but they said something about when they're casting a series regular role, it's really important to be ultimately likable. But when you're casting guest star roles, not at all important.
No.
But it's like, that's interesting. You don't want someone in your living room that you really dislike.
There's a word I use for every co-star and guest star, and it's find your inner snark.
Ooh.
Snarky. And the reason is you are there to give a super strong personality. And some people can use that to develop a series regular mentality. Mm-hmm. Because if you come on and you have to actually be stronger than the series regular, and you have to be more powerful than them, you have to be busier than them. Like if they're coming trying to find information from you, you've got to be so busy you don't want to give the information. So that's why I say snarky. Give them a big attitude. And generally, if you book that and they see that, that's what moves you to the next step from right. your co-stars, guest stars to series regular, because they go, wow, this person gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if you look at TV dramas or comedies, either one, the guest cast has to be very powerful, and they have to be very busy, and they have to have a real strong attitude. And what you said is exactly right. They don't have to be likable.
No, no.
Unless when we do kids, and it's a loving scene at the beginning, so they get kidnapped towards the end. All right, TV dramas, if you're a victim, definitely you can be lovable.
Sure.
But if you're a witness, as a kid, or anything, just about anything else, you give them an attitude, a very big attitude.
And your point's well taken. I mean, there's literally an exception to every rule, and yeah. there's a handful right there. So you talked about tapes a minute ago,
yeah.
and it's absolutely true. And it's not just the case that self-tapes are coming in from people who are not right here in Los Angeles. People who've moved here to do this still do a lot of self-tapes because of various circumstances. The director can't be there, for example, or whatever. So self-tapes are something that everybody who's pursuing an acting career has to get good at. Any special advice for audition self-tapes?
Okay, know who you're talking to. Really connect with them.
Okay.
Remember, when you watch a movie, you're not always seeing the other person in the scene. So we need to know that you're totally connected, number one. Number two, if you can't make it real on a tape, then that's a bad tape. We have to believe you. It has to be very compelling. If you're supposed to make us cry, we better cry. If you're supposed to make us laugh, we better laugh. And also make sure, of course, there's all the technical things. Make sure it's lit well. But basically, we want to care about you. We want a connection. We want a believability to it. We want to see organic work. We want to see to where you really believe what's going on, unless, of course. But we want to suspend our disbelief in your audition tape as much as we would if in your final performance. The other thing I want to say is a lot of agents and managers, when they have newer clients, want them to tape an audition so they can view it before they send them in to casting, because they can see if you're getting better or if you're nailing it more. And so
that's interesting.
And the thing is people go, oh, yeah, well, I don't know, my agent wanted to see it. And then they saw it, and they said they didn't like it, and they wanted me to redo it. Well, the reason they do that is because maybe your acting sucked. You know?
Well, and the truth is, you know, these people are representing you, and they need to look like they're representing, you know, somebody who's worthy of this role. So they want you to do well.
And rightly, sometimes they can't get you in the room for whatever reason, but everybody can look at the tape for 10 seconds. And I say, if you can't nail it in the first 10 seconds, then you're wasting everybody's time in Hollywood, because that's almost any audition, the minute you start, the minute you jump into it. That's why I say the moment before is so important, because we have to believe that we're in that scene right now. And it has to be in the first 10, 15 seconds. But the nice thing about video, the reason casting likes video, is they can turn it off. So they put it on, they watch it for 10, 15 seconds, say not right or not ready yet.
And moving on.
But just because, but if you're a kid or a teen and you're not ready, they'll look at you again in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an adult actor over 20 years of age, they'll look at you again in 3 years.
Woo!
So remember that. While you're young, take advantage. And in 3 months, you can change your whole life just by practicing. And by practicing a new script 5 days a week.
It's true. It's true. And everybody's more forgiving of kids, which is so cool and so appropriate, really.
Yeah.
Well, what is your advice for someone who's trying to break into the business? What are some critical first steps that they have to take to succeed?
Are you talking about kids?
I'm talking about younger actors, but let's also broaden this out to include, like, you know, late teens and early 20s, people who maybe came here from high school or college.
Okay. Well, for parents, make sure your child loves it. If they don't, they will tell you. If they say, I'd rather be playing soccer, let them play soccer.
Yes, please.
Because once you come to L.A., there is no soccer, particularly if you're staying here just for show business. And at the same time, you can go to the park and play soccer anytime. If it's for young adults, just remember it's a marathon, not a race, and it's going to take you, if you're not in the union already, it's going to take you 3 to 5 to 7 years just to get into the union, maybe 10. If you wait until you graduate college, it'll take you 5 to 10 years just to get into the union. And that's why I always say, as a kid and a teen, and remember, Hollywood is run by people who started as child actors.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, so many of the producers and directors, not all of them, started as child actors. They were on shows in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and now they're some of the most powerful people in Hollywood. Even Gary Marsh, who runs Breakdown Services, was a child actor.
By the way, not to be confused with Gary Marsh, who is the head of the Disney Channel. Those are two different people.
Oh, two different people.
Or Gary Marshall, the director.
Yeah, Gary, wow. You know, that's like the, David Gale. You know, there's like two or three different David Gales who are actors, and then Kevin Spacey decided to kill him off in some movie. That's funny.
That is funny. So, yeah, no, and the truth is, and this bears kind of taking a second and noting, you know, for those parents out there who are on the fence about whether they want to, you know, give it a shot to support their kid while they're still a kid in getting some traction in this career, the truth is it is wildly easier to get started before you're 18 than after you're 18, and it doesn't mean forget it and give it up if you're 18 or over. You know, Hollywood is filled with people who waited till after they were 18, but you can get your union card a lot faster, you know. And
well, except 18 is a magical number.
Mm-hmm.
If you have skills at 18, then it's kind of an open slate.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to get booked.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have skills, of course, it's hard. The real difficult age is 22, 23. And because that's when 10 to 15,000 kids that have gone to all their theater school and are sure they know everything because they went to theater school are coming to Hollywood. So you have 10 to 15,000 a year coming. Just for an example, a 13-year-old girl, just generic 13-year-old girl in the industry, there might be, say, 13,000, roughly, just all ethnics, all agencies, 13,000. A generic 18-year-old girl or boy, there might only be 8,000-9,000, because most parents have shipped them off to college.
That's interesting.
At the same time, at 22, 23 years old, the number jumps to 30 to 35,000 who can't even get an agent.
Oh.
Can't even get an agent. And the reason is you have to be very unique and very special and very connected. Where if you're a child actor, you're already in the union, and most kids, you know, you in a commercial, smile and you're SAG, or at least qualify. That is your ticket to any time later in your life, and even if you're 40 years old, you want to be an actor, you can. That's like a college degree right there,
mm-hmm.
just to get
mm-hmm.
in the union, because once you're 22, 23 years old, it's almost impossible.
Well, unless you can play a teenager, because you look so young, and you're competing with kids who are under 18, but you can work adult hours. I mean, that can be a little bit of an advantage. Of course, there's a lot of kids competing for that.
That's true. Most 22, 23-year-old or 25-year-olds who can play a teenager and who do that started when they were 18.
Yeah.
And so they have skills. They've got 3 to 5 years of training. So the whole point is even if you just, say you arrive here at 22, 23 with a college degree, the biggest problem is mental.
Mm.
And you think you know something when you don't. You have to throw away all that stuff that you did in college. And it was wonderful stuff. There's nothing negative about any of it.
The parents are hating you right now.
Yeah, but you throw away all that stuff you got learned in theater school. You have to forget all that.
Oh, man.
You have to get into nightly classes, and you have to practice. You have to do cold reading. You have to network with the other students, and they will kind of help you with your career by networking with the other students. Because every class that you have, I mean, our classes, we have half the kids that are SAG members and done commercials and movies, and the other half are brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And every class in town is that way because nobody can survive. There's too many acting schools. Nobody can survive unless you mix the beginners with the experienced ones. But people go, oh, well, I know something because I have a college degree. And college degree is not an asset in this town.
That's a hard one, and as somebody who's a big believer in advanced education, I'm still struggling with that. But it seems to be true in my experience.
Well, my feeling, we've had some of our kids who've asked me what to do, and I always say go into. They have law degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Humanities, film degrees. Get into the writing programs at any of the film schools. But the main thing is if. If you want to use it, get into writing programs, mainly writing programs. Most everybody, when they, you know, if there are kids, we have 4 or 5 a year who graduate from Pepperdine. They're all SAG. They all have movies. They're very busy. And when they graduate, then they're all recruited into the law department over there because they're all super kids and they're super bright. And they love them there, and they give them a full ride in their master's program and into their pre-law program because they are so bright and connected, and they love that. But I always say you cannot learn acting in school. You can practice it in school, but don't think they can teach you how to act because you learn how to act by doing it.
Oh, I love that. It's so true. Well, I know we're totally pushing against the edge of our time, but I've got 2 more questions I want to throw your way.
Okay, be quick.
I know.
I'll talk very fast.
You've inevitably dealt with a lot of parents through your work coaching young actors. Do you have any advice for parents who are just trying to help their young actors succeed in the business? What would you say to them?
It takes time. Most of the kids, we've dealt with over 150 series regulars in our program, and most of them book at least 1 year to 3 years in our program, unless you've been heavily into some kind of theater or Broadway programs. Like in New York, we have a lot of our kids come to us. They've been Young Simba on Lion King. We had a whole family of kids. I think there was 3 of them that were in, I don't know, 10 years or so, revival of Annie on Broadway. So those kids do very well very quickly. So maybe 1 year. Normally, it's 3 years. If you're coming just for pilot season, figure your third pilot season, you might have a chance. But the main thing is study at home. Now, we offer online classes. Now, online classes are very different because you're expected in online classes to do your own fundamental work.
Mm-hmm.
And we provide videos and audio for that. But then you do get a chance to do the audition material, so the scene material. But the main thing, persistence is the key, and practice makes progress. Practice makes it possible.
I love that.
Because if you don't practice, if your child doesn't love it, then have them do something else. Because if as a parent, if you're pushing them at all, now, of course, you want them to show up for acting class once they've committed, just like to school or any other obligation. But they have to choose it. They have to commit it. And we've had kids as young as 3, 4, 5 who choose it. At the same time, we've had kids from 10, 11, 12, 13 who were pushed in by their parents. They don't last well in our program because you can immediately tell they didn't really want it.
Mm. Yeah, so. That's the advice I would give anyone too. It's just a terrible thing to push a kid into this business. Mm. And then what about the kids themselves? I get asked pretty much daily what someone can do to break in. Now, what would your advice be for maybe a 12-year-old kid who lives far away from LA or New York? You know, what are some of the best ways for them to move toward that dream just right where they are?
Boy, that's a tough one. I mean, in our program, you can download, go on Amazon and download all the acting books and read them, mm-hmm. and realize them. There's lots of different opinions. You're going to read very conflicting information. That the informations of how to get into show business are generally, by the time they print them, they're sometimes out of date. I hate to say that.
Some of them are.
Huh?
Yeah.
And everything is changing very quickly. But if you're a kid and you really want to do this, work on skills. Mm-hmm. Take text material and practice your characters. Practice all your different characters. You can learn a lot from my sites. I have tons of scenes. You can learn a lot from other sites. And just realize there's no one answer. Everybody in this town, there's literally thousands of acting coaches. No one quite has the success that our group has, but that's because there's 7 coaches. We don't make it just one coach, and nobody has all the answers. So it's the main thing is you're going to learn from a lot of different people, but the main thing is practice, practice, practice. And if you can, find voice and diction exercises and practice them higher, lower, faster, slower, louder, softer, and make sure they're very clear. So if that makes sense.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's brilliant advice. And I think, you know, going on to Amazon or wherever you're... Amazon, in this case, I'm a big supporter of local bookstores, but they're not going to have the depth and breadth of acting books that, mm-hmm. that Amazon will. Learn about the industry. Learn about acting. Can you share with us any upcoming projects and how people can find you?
Well, they can find me by going to, well, I have 2 websites. One's actorsite.com, actorsite.com, which is kind of a history of what we've been doing. And then I have theawesomeactingclub.com, and the Awesome Acting Club is all of our future events. And we have camps, we have this fall we're expanding our homeschool program for those kids that are homeschooled. We've found that homeschooled kids in Hollywood do very, very well. Most of them graduate high school by the time they're 15 or 16. And they have tremendous programs here, and the state will pay for many of the kids to actually come to our program.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, because it's...
it's accredited?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, well, it's hard to explain, but it's the homeschools have a budget that the parents can choose, and the parents can choose our school to spend that budget.
That's so cool.
And also, we didn't cover child safety, but we can do that another time.
Yes. Yeah. All right, we'll get you back.
Yeah, we'll come back later.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come here, Jack. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, subscribe to this free podcast and leave a quick rating and review. A moment to click on a star rating really helps, and a minute to write a sentence-long review makes a real difference in the ranking for this podcast. Thank you so much for helping me. Do you want to know more about getting a young actor up and running in Hollywood? Buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And if you need specific help getting your career or your child's career up and running or to the next level, you can get a one-on-one consultation with me over Skype or in person in Los Angeles. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the consultations page. Thanks, and see you next week.